Hi, my name is Racheli Lofglas. Welcome to Torah Simecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. Today we will be studying Sefer Nehemiah, Perek Gimel. Yesterday we learned about Nehemiah's arrival in Jerusalem, serving the city in secret and making a plan with a whole group of varied representatives to start construction on the wall, and then he was met with resistance from three different hooligans. Today we're actually going to continue the wall building process. And I'm going to kind of skip around the psukim since really it's just a list of a lot of names of gates and people. So I'll mention just quite a few of the things that I think are significant. Let's begin. Pasuk Aleph. Vayakam el yashav ha-kohen ha-gadol ve'achav ha-kohanim. El yashiv, the great Kohen priest, got up with his sons and with his fellow Kohanim. Vayivnu et shar ha-tzon, and they built the sheep gate. Hema kitshuhu, they sanctify it. Vayamidu dal totav, they put together its doors. And then they continue a few more places. So what's interesting is that Nehemiah's diplomatic skills are going to be evident throughout this building process. He right away gives the leading Kohanim priests, the highest ranking priest, so to speak, in the city, his due respect by linking Eliashiv's task to his religious stature. So the question is, who really is Eliashiv? Eliashiv's son was the host of dealing with intermarriage in the last few prakim of Sefer Ezra that were studied. And yet, ironically, later on in our Sefer, in Perek 12, we're going to see that Eliashiv is actually intermarried himself. So they were the first to begin the work, and they were assigned the construction of Shar HaTzon, of the Sheep Gate. Eliashiv apparently supports the construction, although later on in the Sefer, we are going to see that he really will join sometimes sides of the enemy against Nehemiah. Okay, now let's talk the map of Jerusalem for a moment. It actually would be really fascinating if you could envision the circle around the city that this construction project would make, or if you could even open a Google Earth map or a Waze map of the city of Jerusalem to see the route that the Jews are taking. Jerusalem is surrounded by valleys on the east, in the south, and in the west. So truly, the easiest way to conquer Jerusalem was usually from the north, which is why they actually start with the construction of the walls and fortifying the city from the northern gate, the Sheep Gate, which is the most northern gate. There's actually a very, very steep climb if you came from any direction aside from the north. So even pragmatically, it made sense to begin there and then descend as opposed to ascend in a very difficult manner. Also, to the north are where the Shomronim, where the Samaritans live. So Nehemiah actually needed to create some kind of a buffer zone to protect the Mikdash and the established city while constructing these walls again. Also, something to note is that Sheep Gate, Shar HaTzon, is not necessarily named for Karbanot, for the sacrifices, as you would assume from the name, but it's actually the place where the buyers would bring currency from vendors to pick up the animals. People actually came from far and wide, and therefore, actually, archaeologically, a lot of bulla have been found there, a lot of coins of some of the names from these people. Okay, so let's fly through some of these psukim. Ve'et Shar HaDagim, next was the Fish Gate, which was built. Hema Karuhu, they solidified the beams of the walls there. Vayamidu Datotav, they established the doors, Manulav, the locks, Ubrichav, and also the bolts of the city. Actually, one important thing to note is that according to the Malbim, wherever we're going to see the verb bana, bet nun hey, which means to build, utilized, the wall is had in that area had completely fallen and needed to be rebuilt from scratch. However, whenever we're going to see the word hechezik, which means to strengthen from the shoresh chazak, chet, zayin, kuf, it means that word is being utilized simply in the areas that needed to somehow strengthen, loosen rocks or reinforce gaps in the wall. It actually seems that Nehemiah and the people are going to reinforce most of the existing walls from the first temple period, and not that they actually rebuilt so much of it from scratch, because as we're going to see later on in the Sefer, the walls are actually completed within 52 days. Okay, so let's puddle jump a little bit between Psukim Dalet, verse 4, through Pasuk Lamed Bet, which is 32, which are actually going to continue to enumerate the gate names. If you follow the city map going counterclockwise, which means basically southwest directions, and whether the gates were being reinforced, which would be the used word hechazik, or if it was being rebuilt from scratch, which would be the word bana. So if you look at Pasuk Hey for a moment, it says, Va'al Yadam, and together with these people, hechaziku hatekoim, the people of Tekoa strengthened the wall. Va'adirehem, and their noblemen, Loheviut Savaram, did not bring their necks, so to speak, in the yokes of Ba'avodat Adonehem, in the labor of their masters. Okay, so The difficulty in this pasuk actually lies in the ambiguity. Whose necks are not being tasked here? Is it referring to the noblemen of Tekoa, or the youth of Tekoa, or the shepherds of Tekoa? So Da Mikra, a fairly modern commentary, makes a comment on Rashi about who are Adirehem, and he says, Ba'alei Adarim Gdolim, the Adirehem, the noblemen, were in charge of tremendous flock, Utsi'irei Haroim Avdu Etel Adirim, and young shepherds would work for these noblemen. Hakatuv Misaper B'Shibcham Shal Adirim, and the text here is teaching us the praises of the nobility of Tekoa, Shelo Heviu Et Savarei Hatsi'irim that they did not force their young shepherds to actually complete the jobs that they had to do on a daily basis, and instead, and they allowed their young shepherds some kind of time off from work, this respite, so that they can do something that they were passionate about in terms of community building politically, which is actually really nice to get time off from work to do something that's really the zeitgeist and sharing something bigger than yourself. On the other hand, unlike the Da Mikra, there are many Mefarshim that believe that the noblemen are seemingly really non-compliant as opposed to the Tekoan youth that we see are pretty vested. So Rav Dov Zakheim explains that in contrast to the destitute regular village people, the noblemen of Tekoa actually had a vested interest in a very politically weak Jewish leadership and to kind of preserve the status quo since they get to be the prime beneficiaries. And this kind of lack of partnership from Tekoa raises the question for us of whether or not there really are other cities who refuse to participate altogether. And, you know, now is not necessarily the time to go out into that idea, but it's just something to keep in the back of your mind as it will come up a little bit later on in the Sefer. Okay, kind of skipping from Pasuk Vav through Pasuk Yud Tet Vav, so from verse 6 to verse 15, just notice the names of these of the gates. So you have in Pasuk Vav, Shar HaYishana, the old city gate, and then list the people who helped to build it. And Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, you see Shar HaGai, which is the valley gate, which is reinforced. Pasuk Yud Dal tells us about Shar HaShpot, which is the dung gate. So those of you familiar with the area walking out of the Kotel, and that's called Shar HaShpot. That's not exactly where it was. It was a little bit more northeast of that, but it's the same idea. And lastly, in Pasuk Ted Vav, we see here Shar HaAyin, which is the fountain gate. Now, Shar HaAyin is important because that was as far as we saw back in the previous parak that Nehemiah got in his reconnaissance missions, as since the animal could not go further because of the low level of the rubble that had fallen around him. So we see that they're starting to fix that up again. And then we see also in Pasuk Tedvav in verse 15 that they take care of what's called Gan HaMelech, which is called the King's Garden. The Malbim tells us that that's the Silwan. So for those of you that know the Silwan area in Jerusalem, that's exactly what was fixed up then. Again, Pesukim Tet Zayin through Lamed Bet actually again list the names of the people that are working and the areas that they're taking care of, especially the cemetery area of King David was reconfigured, so to speak. But an interesting phrase to note is something that we see for the first time actually in Pasuk Kaf Gimel in verse 23. It says, Acharav Hechzik Binyamin, after whoever was previous, somebody strengthened it whose name was Binyamin Vichashuv, and it says Neged Beitam, opposite their house. So that phrase is going to come up a lot, and we'll talk about it in a moment. And the gate that they finally get to with the Netinim, who are non-Jewish workers who actually love aiding the Jews in their projects, they take care up to Pasuk Kaf Vav. We see Shar HaMayim, which is water gate, and in Pasuk Kafchet we see Shar HaSusim, which is horse gate, and then we see again this interesting phrase Hechaziku HaKohanim Ish LeNeged Beito, that the reinforcement was done by the priests near their home, and then again in Pasuk Chavtet Acharav Hechazik Tzadok Ben Imer Neged Beito, that also some guy named Tzadok reinforced the area near his house. And again, that phrase keeps coming up again. Finally, in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, we get to Shar HaMifkad. And in Pasuk Lamed Bet, we've actually done a full almost circle, so to speak. And we're back at Shar HaTzon, which is the sheep gate which we started. So Nehemiah actually succeeded in dividing responsibility amongst the constituents who were building with him into kind of 42 stretches of wall amongst really a range of leaders, families, townsfolk, until we get back, like we just said, to Shar HaTzon Sheep Gate. And by the end of the parak, the Jews actually managed to complete the wall's entire circumference, except that they didn't actually manage to get to the intended height that they wanted, but they did complete the walls. I really think it's important to note that Nehemiah's political genius is really on full display throughout the Sefer, but very interestingly, throughout this wall building project. The building project was really very tricky for a lot of reasons. Not only is there an obvious physical danger, there's also political potential pitfalls. There could be people's inertia that he has to deal with, or assigning people to specific areas to build. Is he going to end up insulting prominent community members if he doesn't assign them to a respectable enough position in the wall? How can he garner everybody's buy-in full in? So not only all those questions that arise, but also another question that we could have is, why does Nehemiah kind of enumerate these lists that seem superfluous? These are lists, you know, that we have now for posterity. There's actually a clear hierarchy. The work we saw began with Eliashiv, the Kohen Gadol, and then went on from there. But there were a lot of groups that were mentioned. We mentioned the regular Kohanim, the regular Levim, regular Jews, and then we also talked about the Netinim, who were water carriers from centuries earlier, may not have even been Jewish. And then there are also government officials who help. So actually, Nehemiah kind of garners the buy-in from many, many groups of people. And one of the things that he does, and we mentioned this phraseology, neged beito, opposite his home, is that he gets people to build alongside their own homes, which kind of gets them to leverage their vested personal interest to increase, you know, families' motivation. And if they know that they're securing their own family's protection, they're certainly going to build more quickly and without any interruption. So I think it's important to digress for a moment and talk about this concept of wall building, because interestingly, if you remember from learning Sefer Zechariah, there's this notion that in Messianic times, there won't be a need for a wall around the city of Jerusalem, as if Hashem would kind of surround the city with a pillar of fire or some kind of protection, that we would not need to fortify ourselves. But the truth is, we have to think about this for a moment, because at the time of Shivat Zion, these returnees from Persia, so to speak, Jerusalem was not a city without a wall. In fact, it had a wall, except it was, as we see, broken and breached in lots of places. And it was imperative to build the walls in order to protect the Jews of Jerusalem and to overturn the embarrassment that they're having amongst, you know, in front of the foreign people. And this shame we saw Nehemiah talk about back in the second chapter when he says, "V'lo niye od cherpa," we should not be shamed anymore. But we also have to think about the principle of Ein Somch El Ahanes, that we don't rely on miracles simply because we know God promised us that he would encircle the city with fire. We still have to do everything in our power to get the job done. And at the time, with Nehemiah, there were people trying to throw them out of Israel all the time. They could not simply sit quietly and do nothing. Another piece, I think, additional to that, is that if we think about the day of Tisha B'Av, the day that we actually lost both temples, the first to the Babylonians and the second to Rome. Nowadays, when we fast on Tisha B'Av, after Chatzot, which is somehow midday, we get up from the floor in our morning, men don their tefillin, and at our mincha prayers, we recite the blessing of Nachem, which is a bracha in which we ask Hashem to console Jerusalem and us. And the question is, why do we actually have room for consolation on such a dark day? Rav Soloveitchik actually explained that the nechama, that our comfort that we have, lies in the fact that Hashem took out his fury on the building and not on the people. And it shows us that Hashem wants the Jewish people to survive. He wants us to flourish and ultimately to reunite and, you know, reconcile our relationship with him. If he punishes us only out of love, like a father disciplines his child, then we do have hope for the future. So essentially, the prayer of Nachem on Tisha B'Av really admits that defeat. It accepts the reality of failure and loss, but it allows us to rebuild and to go on, knowing that ultimately one day Hashem really will protect the city 100%. But until then, we're partners in that game. Okay, I digressed enough. At the end of the parak, it goes back to the issue that we saw in earlier prakim. Sukkim 33 to 35, Lamed Gimel to Lamed Hey, discuss mockery on behalf of Judah's enemies, the same hooligans that we've seen before. Okay, I'm going to read through Lamed Gimel to Lamed Hey, and then we'll discuss. Vayihi kasher shama Sanballat ki anachnu bonim et hachoma. When Sanballat heard we were building, vayichar lo, vayichasar be, vayalag ha'udim, he's angry and he mocks us. Vayomer lifnei achav v'chel sharon, and he tells his colleagues, vayomer ma ha'udim ha'amelelim osim, what are these silly Jews doing? Hayazvu lahem, hayizbachu, is it going to work for them? Are they going to finish the job? Do they think that these stones are going to come back to life? And then, you know, his sidekick, the next hooligan says, even if they complete their building, even a fox can come through and break or breach everything that they're putting together. So clearly, the remarkable success of this building project that Nehemiah put together fails to dissuade these enemies. Sanballat is clearly employing a psychological tactic, arguing that, you know, these miserable Jews are never going to be successful. They're not going to restore and finish their job. The truth is that due to Nehemiah's licenses from King Artaxerxes, Sanballat cannot simply just take up arms against the builders. So the same thing, Tovia the Ammonite also questions the wall's adequacy, saying that, you know, even a fox could breach it. So they're taunting us psychologically, but they can't do much more than that. Yet, Nehemiah doesn't want the people to be disheartened. We saw what happened in the book of Ezra when the Tsara Yehuda tried to taunt the Jews. Construction was ceased for 18 years. So here, upon hearing these accusations from the hooligans, Nehemiah davens to Hashem out loud. And that's Pasuk Lamed Vav Lamed Zayin. I'm going to read Nehemiah's prayer. Shema Elokeinu, listen Hashem. Ki hayinu buza, we have been embarrassed. V'hashev cherpatam el rosham, put the shame back on their heads. Utneim leviza be'eretz shivya, let them be shamed. V'atichas al avonam v'chatotam mefanecha, do not cover up or whitewash or put under the rug the sins of these hooligans. Al timache, don't forget them. Ki they are trying desperately to anger us. So Nehemiah essentially is asking Hashem to remember what the agenda is of these enemies, of shaming the Jews, and that they should be shamed instead. But because of Nehemiah's leadership, these neo-Tsara Yehuda cannot undermine the Jews and halt their plans the way that happened back in Ezra. And I think that credit has to be given to Nehemiah. The people seem to truly stand behind Nehemiah and his leadership. And from him, we learn the importance of forward progress in the face of certain uncertainty. Sometimes really tangible results are a leader's most effective response to skepticism from anyone, his own people or from outsiders. He doesn't just daven. He continues to build the people up and to boost them. Pasuk Lamed Chet, the last pasuk, tells us, Vanivnet hachoma, and we built the wall. Vatikasher kol hachoma, and we connected the wall. Oh, we linked it all together. Ar chetzia, vayihi lev la'am la'asot, and the heart of the people was in it to take care of this. So the perek actually completes a stage in Nehemiah's mission. After surveying the walls and breaking it up for people and seeing through the execution on a practical level, I think Nehemiah is actually quite similar to Yosef of the Egypt story, who devised the plan during a time of famine, and not only devised it and gives it over to Paro, he actually implemented it himself. Nehemiah does the same thing. Ezra does not do such a thing. If there were ever a problem, Ezra fasts and he davens and he waits for others to come and make initiatives. He doesn't force his plan on them. Nehemiah, though, is a doer from start to finish, and he even records who does what to give them kind of a legacy forever and maybe motivating future builders to want to build. Maybe that's why we have plaques all over so many of our Jewish institutions. Anyhow, I truly think that Nehemiah is a religious, hands-on administrator, and we have a lot to learn from him. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmas, Malka Esther, Batzvi Yosef.